How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are nearly every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare here at WrestlingObserver.com. Last week, no show. I was deathly ill, but I'm back now. Everything seems to be fine. And as a result, thinking about this when Mike and I were going down the list of topics to discuss on the show today, when you get sick and you miss 1 week at Wrestling Observer Live, which I missed last week, you realize that, in fact, you have not talked at all about WWE Night of Champions. That was WWE's last pay-per-view before the pay-per-view they air tonight, WWE Hell in a Cell. We have not talked about the fact that Mark Henry is the World Heavyweight Champion. We have not talked about the fact that Alberto Del Rio lost the championship at Night of Champions. We haven't talked about any of those things. And there's another pay-per-view taking place today. Why? Because we skipped 1 week. A lot of shows going on, everybody. We haven't talked at all about UFC 135. There was another UFC last night. And, in fact, there's another UFC this coming weekend. Tons of shows going on. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get caught up with the news. So many things I couldn't believe we hadn't discussed on this show when we were going down the lineup, including the fact that Matt Hardy is in rehab right now after a drug bust, where had he not gone to rehab, his bail would have been set at $1 million. That's a big deal. We're going to talk about that. Plus, of course, preview the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view today. Talk about all of the matches. Do some predictions. That sort of deal. Talk about the WWE Network. Vince McMahon is now talking about major WWE pay-per-views heading to the WWE Network. WrestleMania, Survivor Series, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble. Is this a bad idea? Is the guy insane? We're going to talk about that here on the program. Plus, the debut of Ring of Honor on television last week, ROH on Sinclair. We'll discuss that show. I've seen the first episode. The second episode aired last night. We'll tell you where you can see it. Absolutely free if you do not have a Sinclair affiliate. Talk about Ultimate Fighter. The new season of that show has started already. It is pro wrestling. We've got some drunk driving arrests. We'll talk about that. Hugh Jackman. Haven't even mentioned that situation with Dolph Ziggler. We got so much stuff to talk about today. It's not even funny. So, back in just a moment with more 2 hours. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of stuff to discuss today, including last night's UFC on Versus, the big show headlined by Dominic Cruz and Demetrius Johnson. It was actually an awesome show in the cage. And Mike, your thoughts on Cruz retaining his title yet again?
Yeah, highly disappointed I couldn't be there because I am from the D.C. area, so I'm upset I couldn't make it up to it. And then to find out how good of a show that it was, I didn't get a chance to see the undercard, but I saw the entire televised portion. It was awesome. Cruz, I know, he's got that style that drives you nuts, but he was in there with a guy that, man, if he was a little bit bigger, he would have caused Cruz a lot more problems. Demetrius Johnson is just, you know, energy personified, never stops moving. And, you know, he did provide some problems for Cruz, but Cruz is just, he's too good. He's, you know, that awkward style, you know, fits him great. And he was just able to put up with the speed enough where Johnson started to gas. And he does defend his title again. And he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, I'm not sure how many in a row this is for him, but, you know, it's an impressive streak that he's on. And again, you pointed, some people look at the UFC and, even though there's a lot of title fights out there, you know, are you going to run into a problem possibly one day with having just champions that are just way too dominant? And for right now, they do have some incredibly dominant champions.
Demetrius Johnson at the press conference, they were talking about how there will probably soon be a 125-pound division. And one would think, well, that division is tailor-made for this short fella. And he's talking about how, no, I want to stay at 135. I think I can become the champion. I got some stuff I can go work on, and I'm going to stay here at 135. I don't know if this is the best idea in the world, but that seems to be his strategy.
Well, you know, it's his speed is going to cause people problems. It's just his size, and guys who are 150 pounds, who, you know, are dieting down to 135, those are going to be the guys that cause him all sorts of problems. Not that he can't be competitive and not that he can't put on great fights, but I'm sitting there watching the fight last night. I'm imagining him as, you know, a less muscled 118-pound boxer. It's not like America cranks out, you know, smaller guys. You know, there's been Michael Carbajal. There's been a few over the years. But, you know, you don't see a whole lot of them. I was just imagining him in a boxing ring with that kind of speed and, you know, his relentless style and attitude. It's just, it's absolutely unbelievable what he could do in a boxing ring. But, yeah, I mean, for his sake, I hope they would come up with a 125-pound weight division because he would actually be, you know, quite dominant there.
Well, my point was they're going to come up with one, and he doesn't want to at this point.
Well, you know, you go on a three-loss losing streak, and unless you're Clay Guida or somebody like that, his fights would have to be really exciting before they kind of nudge him like they did to Akiyama and go, well, you know what, you're not going to have a job here because even though you're good, you're exciting, you keep losing. So if you're not going to do this, eh. So it may get to that point too. But again, as long as he keeps having exciting fights and people want to see him, I have no problem with it.
On our website, Josh Nason does staff picks for all of the shows, quizzes various people about who they think is going to win. And I never get my staff picks in, unfortunately, because I've had some good weeks. You, however, are doing very well. You get your staff picks in every time. You went 4-1 on this show. Josh and Todd Martin were both 3-2, and Oliver Kopp and Mike Sawyer 2-3. Which one did you miss out on?
Let's see. I think which one did I miss out on? The Eve Edwards Oliveira fight, which I did actually see that fight. That was the final Facebook fight. And Edwards with that, you know, nasty, I think it was a right hook and a left high kick and just a ton, and I mean a ton of 20-plus punches. It had to have been that he took, that Oliveira took cleanly before Mario Yamazaki broke it up in the second round. But that's the only fight I had missed on the night. I actually had gotten Stefan Struve, which you and Todd Martin did a show this week, and you put in the newsletter this week talking about the odds on fights and whether they're too long or not. I actually won some money on Stefan Struve last night, so
really?
At +165.
Did you predict that he was going to win via power bomb, armbar?
I didn't think he'd take a power bomb. And as good as his ground game is, I was surprised that he was so fluid in locking on the submission that he did. That was a really good fight, and obviously you knew there were going to be kicks, and Barry in the first round just could not get to Struve. I mean, it's just amazing. In the DC media this week, it was, you know, bandied about every time Struve and Barry were on, and they were talking about the height of Stefan Struve. They would say, you know, God, you're facing a guy who's 6'11", and Barry goes, no, he's not. And they would ask, you know, well, what are you talking about? He's like, well, they, you know, did that measurement a long time ago. The guy's actually grown since then. And it was just a incredible visual out there, and Barry just could not touch him in the second round. He started to creep in on him. But it was a very impressive performance for Struve, who, you know what, he'll always have a place on my roster because nobody gets knocked out like a guy who's 6'11".
The man was literally a foot taller than his opponent.
Yeah, it was very, it's as close as you can come modern day. It was like Couture and Tony last year. This is as close as you can come to Pride for what would, you know, it's not a freak show matchup, but the visual makes it freaky.
Sure, I mean, they're in the same weight division, so it's all is fair.
Oh, yeah, and both, you know, kickboxers, obviously, if you're born in Holland, you just come out kicking and have, you know, iron chins. So, you know, it was a battle of kicks, and Struve using that front kick to try to keep Barry away, and, you know, using it as a pawing jab, and it was a really fun fight. And Barry, you know, again, you don't see this often in UFC anymore. You seem to think you've seen it more in Pride, obviously Rampage Jackson being the best at it, especially the knockout of Ricardo Arona, you know, the big power bomb, which Barry laid on Struve, and Struve was still able to hang on. He was able to brace himself, and it was just a really, really exciting, fun fight.
The opener on TV was Handsome Matt Wyman and Mac Danzig, and their last fight, Danzig caught him in a guillotine, and the referee stopped the fight, and Handsome Matt was irate, saying he was not finished, he did not tap, he was not in trouble. So this was the big rematch, and believe it or not, Scott is my witness. In the last 10 seconds of the third round, Danzig put him in another guillotine. It looked tight. And handsome Matt Wyman responded by telling the referee and giving him a big thumbs up to indicate that, no, I'm fine. Don't stop the fight. And it went to the bell, the horn, and to the judges. They gave it to Matt Wyman, 29-28. I had to fight for Wyman as well. I know a lot of people had to fight for Danzig. Who did you believe won this fight?
I thought it was Wyman. You know, and I was kind of surprised. You know, it seemed to be if you were cage side, you really, you thought Danzig won, or you know, most of those guys seemingly thought Danzig had won the fight. I thought Wyman actually took every single round, even though, I mean, they were incredibly close. In fact, I had the last round 10-10, and, you know, it was 30-28, but it's one of those scores that I had where the fight itself was actually, you know, far closer than the score is going to indicate.
And then the other televised fight, we had Anthony Johnson and Charlie Brenneman. And another somewhat controversial fight. Anthony Johnson was just killing this poor guy. He was just killing him. Finally, he stands up and hits a roundhouse kick to the face. Just looked brutal. The referee stopped it like the moment the foot hit the face. But Brenneman went down and ended up on his elbows and was looking up and seemed fine. So he complained about the stoppage. It was controversial. It really depends on, you know, where the referee was at that exact moment. He probably thought the guy had been killed. That's how hard the kick was, and he stopped the fight accordingly. But by the time the guy hit the ground after the fight had been stopped, he appeared to be fine. So I guess take your pick whether you felt this was a fair stoppage or not. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. I mean, Brenneman, the way his head rocked back with the kick and how stiff he looked, you know, it's okay to say that he was out before somebody rained down another punch. Now, he was able to catch himself when he hit the ground, but you know what? It's in the era we're in, it's okay to make that judgment call. You can always do the fight again, and you don't have to take it out on Brenneman when it comes to his next fight or something like that. I mean, err on the side of caution, and I thought that was okay. Johnson, though, I swear he's going to kill somebody at that weight. He's better off at 185 for everybody else, but at 170, I mean, he can be a killer.
All right, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Hell in a Cell is this evening, but we got to talk about Night of Champions first. That sets it up. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, streaming worldwide on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, and of course, available on Facebook, Facebook.com/WrestlingObserver. It is the official Wrestling Observer Live Facebook page. If you want to get involved with the show, if you want to post questions, post anything, or see the latest updates, head to the Facebook page, facebook.com/WrestlingObserver, and of course, WrestlingObserver.com as well. So we'll get to more plugs later on in this update, but we're here to talk about the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view tonight, but since we have not been here in 2 weeks, and since there was a pay-per-view 2 weeks ago, we should probably talk about what happened at the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view as it sets us up. There were two title changes, two big title changes, one of which was rather surprising, and one of which was not. Mark Henry beat Randy Orton for the title. I think that, I don't know what my official prediction was at the time, but, you know, Mark Henry's been doing a great job. I think I said that I wanted Mark Henry to become the champion, and he did. He beat Randy Orton for the title. As clean a heel victory as you're going to get in 2011, and as dominant a victory as you're going to get for a new champion in maybe years. World's Strongest Slam, 1-2-3, Mark Henry is your new champion. And at least until today, at least, we'll see what happens at Hell in a Cell. But that was that victory. And then, in a very big surprise, John Cena beat Alberto Del Rio via submission to win the title. For those of you that have been following the show for a long time, the CM Punk angle was rushed. He was brought back early. They had to get him on SummerSlam. And one of the reasons they did so was because they wanted Alberto, to be champion going into the WWE Tour of Mexico, which is now just weeks away. And actually, it might even be sooner than that. I think it may be this coming week. But anyway, the point is they put the title on him at SummerSlam. And then before they even went to Mexico, they took the title off of him again. So I'm presuming he wins the title back tonight, in which case I don't even know why they bothered taking it off him in the first place. I'm completely baffled by the booking of that match, particularly in hindsight. They're doing a three-way tonight. It doesn't matter who wins. It's just mind-boggling booking. And then in the main event, Triple H beat CM Punk in a no disqualification match. Kevin Nash did run in. He hasn't been seen since. A lot of questions in WWE in terms of their booking. And Mike, your thoughts on that show and where things have gone since?
I was really baffled by Alberto Del Rio. And that, you know, they waited so long and to put the title on. They had all these intentions to. Things keep coming up. They waited to do it. Meanwhile, he's performing his character, and you know, he's doing, I think, a great job. I think everything that he delivers is great. His interaction with Rodriguez, who, you know, alone is fantastic. But I don't think he was really connecting in the way that they wanted him to, even though he was going to be out there and he was starting to gain some momentum. You know, Punk doesn't need the title. Cena doesn't need the title. The guy who needs the title is Alberto Del Rio. And to take the title off of him, you know, that you wait all that time to put it on him, then you take it off of him. Why? What was the point of that? I mean, you could have waited till you went to Mexico, you know, before, you know, putting it on him. You could have extended out, you know, Cena and him for a little bit longer. I just don't, it shows you how short-term they think. And Mark Henry, on the flip side of that, they've done a magnificent job with Mark Henry. They have done a fantastic job making him a killer, except for that little blip where he snatched up Jim Ross. That was just, you know, that was cheap and didn't need to be done, but everything else has been great. He wins the title from Randy Orton clean, goes over great. Now we have Hell in the Cell. So just because he won the title, now he's going to have to defend it in Hell in the Cell? I mean, it just shows you how this is the prime example of them not thinking ahead, not even and changing their mind constantly. You know this pay-per-view is coming up. Why did you not do anything to build up for it? It makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, they did that with actually Beth at that last pay-per-view, the Night of Champions pay-per-view. She's in Buffalo. It's her hometown. And they don't put the belt on her. Why? After this being, what, the third straight match, why do you not put the belt on her there? Another thing that absolutely made no sense. And, again, if you didn't want to put it on there because she was getting cheered and you didn't want to show Kelly, why did you not just have Natalya be in that match? Because you weren't thinking ahead. It's that is the part about WWE and all of this stuff that just absolutely drives you nuts.
Well, I think they just think in strange ways. Like, for example, the Alberto Del Rio loss. You know, I think they go in there and they go, okay, Alberto was supposed to win this match, but you know what? John Cena's lost on two straight shows now. So if Alberto wins, John Cena loses on three straight. We can't have that. So let's have Cena win, and then we'll have Alberto win at the next show. You know, that's more important to them than, oh, we just put this belt on Alberto. He needs all the help he can get. It's not the right time to take the title off of him right now. You know, it's things like that that go through their heads. And then, you know, they have a situation like with Beth Phoenix. And it's like, oh, well, you know, she should win the title, but God, we're in her hometown. If she wins the title, everyone's going to cheer for her. She's supposed to be a heel. We don't want people cheering for her. We better beat her. Not realizing that they're going to cheer whether she wins or loses, you know, and you're just going to make the people in their hometown upset when they pay their money and she doesn't end up winning the title. Then you're just going to put the title on her on the next show. I mean, it's a lot of questions about all of this stuff. And I guess we'll see where they go tonight. Let's talk about Hell in a Cell. As noted, we've got a three-way match in the main event for the title. It's John Cena, CM Punk, and Alberto Del Rio for the title. And again, I predict Alberto leaves with the belt, which again begs the question, why'd you bother taking it off him a month ago? But that would be my prediction. What are your thoughts, and how do they do that in this match? Is it going to be my thought, based on what happened on Monday with Punk pinning Alberto clean, is that Alberto ends up pinning Punk to win Cena's title, which sets up a bunch of three-ways down the road as well.
That's what I would think, too, although I'll ask this. When is Mexico for the Raw in SmackDown tapings?
I've been talking about Mexico for months, and I actually don't know the date, but now I should probably go up and find out. So let's take a trip together to WWE.com. And find out where they're going.
Well, and as you do that, I'll say this. If it's not too far off, I can see, and again, it's because it's such a hot potato with the belt and everything, I could see Cena coming out of this, pinning Punk, Del Rio being upset, thinking Triple H is he's in on the conspiracy too, but you know what? When we go to Mexico, where I'm from, you know, and where I'm royalty, you're not going to be able to pull this off. I'm going to make sure of it. And then he wins the belt there, which, you know, could be an idea, too. I mean, it's either going to be one or the other. Del Rio's either leaving with that belt, or the only reason he's not leaving with that belt is because he's going to win it on Raw when they go down there.
Where in God's name is the list of upcoming events here on WWE.com?
Quick, get DR Luch on the line. Stat.
Appearances. Show appearances for any. Now, these are just personal appearances. How do I find out where they're going? Shows.
I don't know, but do you think Hoovy will try to get in backstage? Where's Hoovy at right now?
I don't know.
You know what? He should have. Hoovy, you know, on Monday night, too, and as you continue to look for that, something else that drives me nuts is announcing, but, you know, we've beaten that horse repeatedly. But when they busted out the WCW level five-man broadcast team, I mean, that was a table that just, if any announced crew ever deserved Stevie Ray and Juventud, there it was.
All right, WWE Worldwide, upcoming tours. Here we go. It's kind of funny. They call it a tour like it's the circus. There we go, October 12th. So it's next week.
So, well, again, Del Rio goes out of it, goes home for the big victory celebration. If he doesn't do that, it's only because he's going to win it Monday night. So, or that Monday night. So, again, yes, what you said is exactly the case, unless they have some more plans with Triple H or Triple H's posse, you know, trickling into CM Punk or Cena or something like that. I mean, I would figure this is going to be the thing that carries them to Survivor Series between those three.
There is that possibility of Del Rio winning the title on Raw. I think it's been, I can't even remember the last time. I got to go up and figure that out. WWE, let's check the WWE Championship. When the last time that championship changed hands on Raw? Let's see. Oh, John Cena, Raw. Really? July 25th, 2011?
Oh, see, and
it was.
What that means, too. Doesn't Cena have, like, you know...
That's right. They did that deal with Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, 1,100 okay. titles at this point in his career.
Yeah, all right. There have actually been more title changes on Raw than I actually thought. How about that? I thought you'd have to go back years.
Speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It really does. All right, so, Alberto, to me, either wins tonight or he wins it on television. But, hey, you know what? If he wins it on television, I'm going to be really mad because the Beth Phoenix thing, like I said, Beth Phoenix is a heel and they didn't want her winning the championship in her hometown because God forbid she got cheered. So now they're going to do it with Alberto Del Rio, also a heel in Mexico. That would actually be infuriating to me. And I know some people are going to say, oh, well, Brian, you know, CM Punk was a heel in Chicago. Yeah, he was turning babyface. And Alberto Del Rio and Beth Phoenix are not turning babyface, so it's not the same deal here. So I guess we'll find out, but that's the match tonight. I think the match is going to be okay. I don't have huge high hopes for it being like a classic or anything like that. We should actually talk about just the Hell in a Cell, the match itself. Back in the day, Hell in a Cell was a very famous match because great matches. Legendary matches occurred in the cell. Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, the very first one. I mean, nobody who ever saw that match is going to forget about it. Or the Mick Foley-Undertaker match. You know, I think most people have forgotten the match itself, but they haven't forgotten the two bumps off the cage that Mick Foley took. And for a while there, you were guaranteed blood and violence. For a while, it was somebody was going off the top. It was like a legendary match. It's not anymore. And we're going to talk about why when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, streaming worldwide at WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have newsletters. The Wrestling Observer newsletter, which Dave Meltzer has published since 1983. Pretty sure that most people listening to this have heard of the Wrestling Observer. You can read the Wrestling Observer every week for your subscription price. $10.99 per month for the website. $10.99! It's all it costs. You get full access to all the brand new observers. And we have back issues dating back to 1991 on the website. Not all of them. We're adding one a week. Right now, I think we've got all of 1991, 1992, 1993, and half of 1994. Plus every observer that has been published since 2008. They're all available on the website. We've got nearly every figure four dating back to 2001. There's probably about 20 issues missing. One of these days, they'll go up there and there will be a complete archive dating back to around the time of the death of WCW. And on top of all that, radio shows. If you love this show and you only get to hear it one time per week on Sports Byline, Sirius Satellite Radio, you are missing out. We do shows pretty much every single day. In fact, most Thursdays now, I do four shows in one day. It's preposterous. But if you love this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Again, it's only $10.99 a month. It's about the cost of a lunch. And you head up there, you get all of the brand new shows, 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every single week, and every show that we have ever done. A show we did on August 26th, 2007, for example. Just throwing something out there. That's available in the archives. Every show we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. We have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Just this past week, we had Jerry Jarrett on the show talking about Memphis, the death of WCW, the birth of TNA. We had Chris Masters on a couple of weeks ago. Lance Storm is on every other week. We cover everything. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, lucha, Japan, whole nine yards. It's all
Big
up there
John
right
McCarthy
now.
Big John McCarthy was on this week.
Big John McCarthy was on the show this week. That's right. So all you got to do is head up to WrestlingObserver.com. If you want a sample, not that the show isn't enough of a sample, but if you head up to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, four free radio shows right there. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to pay anything. Just click on them, download the MP3, listen to them. If you like what you hear, you could have that every single day with a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So please do not miss out. Like I said, if you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription, and if you don't, we will make it right. But we never make it right because we don't have to. People love their subscriptions. So, Mike, we're on Hell in a Cell. Let's continue here. And by the way, Dave Meltzer live running play-by-play of the pay-per-view starting immediately after this show goes off the air on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. You can go up and find out who beat who, some of the details, and then later on tonight, Dave and I, a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, only for website subscribers. We'll talk about all of the matches in detail, backstage notes. We'll preview Raw, talk all the news from the weekend. It'll be a good show, so check it out. All right, Randy Orton, Mark Henry, Hell in a Cell for the title. It is too early to take the belt off of Mark Henry, but Mark Henry beat him clean at the last show. Does he beat him clean again? It is a cell match. I don't know how else anybody would get in. I don't know what else you would do. Obviously, you could tear the door off or something like that, but what is your prediction for that match and finish?
I hope they actually have him win clean again. It doesn't hurt Randy Orton if that happens. I mean, it really doesn't. And the way you've positioned Mark Henry, you know, again, people still like Mark Henry. They like to cheer for Mark Henry. They like seeing and believe in a big guy that can beat you up. And that's what Mark Henry is, no matter what they've done with him over the years. He's still a really big dude who, you know, can wreck shop on you if he's angry. So the way they positioned him, they have him with the clean win. This is Randy Orton is the only guy or one of the few guys on that roster that I believe could get away with blading hard way, or I'm sorry, with blading and claiming it was hard way and getting away with it. If any match needed it, this match does. The fact that the way the positioning of this whole feud has gone, it has been very unfortunate, I think, for Mark Henry, because you have him going into Hell in the Cell just after winning the title. I mean, this could have been pushed off for a while, and you didn't have to have constant Henry Orton matches either, which I'm sure, you know, Randy Orton didn't want anyway. You don't have to have that, but you could have strung this along for, you know, far more weeks to get far more impact out of it, and they've blown it. And to me, the only thing they can do is have, because there is no blood, because he does need it, and because it does not hurt Orton at all whatsoever, he goes over cleanly, which leads to, I would assume, Sheamus beating Christian tonight, which will lead to Henry and Sheamus. You know, Sheamus always had problems with Randy Orton. You know, Henry's the guy that's eliminated Orton. Now it's Henry, Sheamus. You know, that the possibility that the matches aren't going to be fantastic or anything like that, but it's going to be two bulls slamming together, and at least it's a new, fresh matchup. So I'm not going to complain whatsoever. The only way I complain is if Orton wins, because why?
Well, the answer would be because they're afraid to beat Randy Orton.
Again, with Randy Orton and John Cena, it's everybody knows they're the golden geese. It's okay. Their fears, and maybe, you know, I don't know how true that rumor was, if one of the things that Vince freaked out about was the low rating after the pay-per-view prior to that, and they decided to pull the title off of Del Rio to mix things up on Raw, even though that first show went head up against Monday Night Football, which, you know, what were you going to expect? So, again, and the other thing is, too, it takes a long time to rebuild faith. You know, there's DVRs, there's, you know, streams, there's a million one ways to watch Raw. People are skipping Raw and not thinking about it, you know, as much as they have in a long, long time. You know, if they find out that it's good, well, maybe they'll catch it on Universal Saturday or something like that, but it's not tune-in must-see TV. And them trying to hotshot, if that's what the case was, with them pulling the title off of Del Rio and putting it on Cena, you know, in a little fit, because McMahon had a fit of rage or something like that. I mean, it just shows that it's just absolutely unbelievable.
I realize that they've got a lot of writers, and a lot of them, especially nowadays. I mean, when you think they like young people on their writing team, they want people in their 20s. And when you think about, let's say they've got someone there who's 23 years old on the writing crew. You know, when WCW died, that person was 13. And if they watched WCW for 3 years during the fall, you know, they were 10. You know, they don't have this. They never saw old school logical pro wrestling booking. They saw what we have now, which I don't even know what it is, really. It's just it's a circus. It's just kind of a circus. But point is, to me, even if you never saw old school pro wrestling, even if you never saw well booked pro wrestling by there's a million great bookers in the history of this business, you know. Even if you never saw any of that, you should still know, like, basic human psychology. You know, I don't watch a lot of sports, but, you know, sports, they're real. So real stories take place, and fans get caught up in real stories, and there's certain things that play on people's emotions. And one of those things is when you're an athlete, whether whether you're a football team and you've got an eternal rival, or whether it's some sort of single sport and you've got the one guy, and no matter how great you are, the guy comes along and you can't beat that guy, or you can't beat that team. And you just keep trying, and you just keep trying, and sometimes you come close, but you lose again. People really get behind this chase. And, you know, when you finally beat that guy, or you finally beat that team, it's like the best thing that ever happened in the world to all of the fans and the people that have been following you and sticking with you. And when you've got a monster heel like Mark Henry, I mean, I think that they, I mean, we'll find out tonight. I mean, maybe they've already figured this out, and I'm just talking about with the direction they're heading. But to me, you don't always have to have this parody booking where John Cena beats a guy 1 month, and then the next month the guy cheats and wins. So John Cena really didn't get beat, but he got a loss. And then the next week or the next month, John Cena just beats the guy again. And John Cena never loses. And he never really has a guy that goes out there and is better than him. John Cena's always pushed as better than everybody else. You know, with Randy Orton here, you can easily do this story. Mark Henry is this big, strong, giant monster who is angry about the fact that it took him 15 years to win this title. And now that he's gotten this belt, now that he's beaten Randy Orton clean in the middle of the ring for this belt, he is not losing this belt for 15 years. And he's going to run through everybody. And nobody can beat him. And this is the guy that after all these years, Randy Orton has run into that he can't beat. And he gets beat at the pay-per-view. They do Hell in a Cell tonight, and Orton comes close. Maybe even hits the RKO, and Mark Henry kicks out, and then World's Strongest Slam, 1, 2, 3. Mark Henry beats him again. Maybe Randy Orton is out of title contention and Sheamus gets in, but, you know, Randy's always talking about it. You know, and they've done this with a couple of guys. I know I can beat this guy. I know I can beat this guy. And put Randy Orton in another feud for a while. Have Mark Henry beat Sheamus. You know, and then eventually the day comes where Randy Orton comes back and you build up to that big match and Randy Orton finally beats Mark Henry. And nobody's going to remember. I mean, they'll remember the times that Mark Henry beat him, but those times don't matter anymore because now Randy Orton beat that guy. Now Randy Orton is the better man. He didn't give up. He kept fighting and he finally beat the guy that had beat him so many times. It's such an easy story. It is such an easy story. But instead, I'm terrified that the show's going to come tonight and they're going to go, oh, we can't beat Randy Orton twice in a row. We just can't do that. Nobody will buy his merch anymore. Nobody's going to be behind him anymore. We got to put Randy Orton over. And then on SmackDown, we'll give the title back to Henry on a DQ or something like that. That's why nobody's over. That's why nobody gets into characters. That's why nobody cares about any of this stuff. You've got to just stick to a story, a basic human story, and just let it go.
It's the simplest psychology in the world. They're the simplest stories in the world. They're the most timeless things. It's amazing that they want to be sports and be entertainment and bridge it, yet they don't understand pop culture. They don't, you know, or they have their own spin on of what they think is right, and they forget about the things that made them. The terrifying part is you're 35 years old. I'm 35 years old. Those of us who grew up were the last generation on those who had a chance to see multiple, you know, shows from around the country. Now, Ring of Honor is kind of doing it in this form, but can you imagine, and as we're seeing this now, like you said, there people were kids when the Monday Night Wars were ending. They have no idea. You know, Les Thatcher, Jerry Jarrett this week, talking about how WWE very simply overproduced and just talking about it. People are going to have no clue of what real good professional wrestling on TV was like. And it, you know, called sports entertainment. It doesn't matter. It was good, timeless stuff. And they just continue to screw that up. I think they booked St. Louis for the February pay-per-view? Vengeance or whatever it is?
Sure.
They're going to be in St. Louis at the beginning of the year. Here's a simple thing.
Actually, I think St. Louis is...
Hold on to the belt till then.
St. Louis is Royal Rumble, but yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, still, it doesn't matter. He can hold on to the belt till at least then.
Randy Orton is from St. Louis.
Well, that's the whole thing, and then you can actually build towards a big thing of a big celebration,
yes.
A big end of that show.
Yes, Randy Orton cannot beat the guy until he finally gets to his hometown, and he vows, I am going to beat this man in St. Louis. Buy your ticket now. And then he beats the guy, and everybody gets their money's worth.
Yes, but that may make too much sense.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to continue running down the preview for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, and maybe we'll talk more about basic timeless stories. Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're running down the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. We were talking about, actually ranting and raving about Randy Orton and Mark Henry for quite a while there. And that, in fact, does lead us to the Sheamus versus Christian match, which I think unofficially is going to be a number one contenders match, I would presume, if Mark Henry beats Orton and Sheamus beats Christian, which I would be baffled if he did not. We'll have Mark Henry and Sheamus as a title match. I suppose it's possible that Henry could win and Christian somehow beats Sheamus, or they do disqualification or something like that, and they rematch at the Vengeance show. But we'll see where they end up going here, and should be a very good match, this one.
Oh, yeah, and Sheamus, there's no doubt Sheamus should win this. And, I mean, for Christian, there's a million. That is not the strongest roster in the world. There's a lot of other guys that he can and should be working with. So, yeah, Sheamus and Henry seems to be the most logical thing. And Christian, you know, saying he got screwed somehow or something like that and facing off with Sin Cara or Brian Daniel or Daniel Bryan or anybody on that roster will be a good thing.
Does Kelly beat Beth again tonight?
No, I think then it starts really truly becoming a some sort of insider joke or something like that if it doesn't happen here. But I just don't think there's any way that Beth doesn't win tonight. Actually, there are ways. I'll go with Beth.
I think they see Kelly as I think they think that her last win over Beth really started to get her over as a champion. And I don't know. I think Kelly's going to sell pretty much the same amount of merchandise one way or the other. You know, if she gets beaten, is she really not going to sell any merchandise? I mean, I find that hard to believe. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't get their merchandise numbers. But
does Kelly have merchandise?
I'm sure she does. She's got booty shorts. I don't know. We'll check WWE.com during the break. We'll find out what kind of merch Kelly has to sell. Maybe she's got a pair of ropes or something. I don't know. Kelly and Beth tonight. I predict Beth wins the title, but stranger things have happened. Like last month. Actually, 2 weeks ago. All right, we're going to head to our hourly break. We'll be back with the final match here to preview. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare here at WrestlingObserver.com. We have tons to talk about in the next hour. We're in the middle of previewing the WWE Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. We've got one match left. It's Sin Cara versus Sin Cara. I'm going to talk about that here in just a moment. If you are listening right now, the show starts at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the show on the front page of the website. And we'll be talking about the show later on this evening on a special members-only edition of Wrestling Observer Live, only at WrestlingObserver.com as well. Sin Cara versus Sin Cara is interesting because the evil Sin Cara appeared on SmackDown this week and actually dropped the name Mystico in his promo. And what happened was, and this is very strange, this whole situation. In fact, I suppose we should probably tell the story from the beginning. The original Sin Cara, the one that got busted for a wellness violation, the original Sin Cara was a huge superstar in Mexico. Such a huge superstar that he was the first person in history, and at least at this rate, perhaps the last, the first ever luchador to win the Wrestling Observer Wrestler of the Year Award. Part of that obviously also is the state of American pro wrestling, but Mystico became the first guy to win the Wrestling Observer newsletter Wrestler of the Year Award several years ago. A gigantic, gigantic superstar in Mexico, and WWE ended up signing him and bringing him to WWE and giving him the name Sin Cara. And they made it very clear in Mexico that the Sin Cara that was coming to WWE was in fact the same guy. It was the same Mystico, and obviously they want to use him as a headliner when they go to Mexico in a week and a half and all of that sort of thing. So that is the story of the original Sin Cara. Now, there are now two Sin Caras, and why was there a second Sin Cara? Where did this guy come from? Who is he? Well, we're going to talk about that after the break and how that plays into the match they're having tonight on pay-per-view. So back in just a moment with that story, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour. Talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, Sports Byline USA Broadcasting Network, worldwide at WrestlingObserver.com, streaming off of our front page. Here to talk about the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Before the break, we were talking about Sin Cara, the story of Sin Cara, the former Mystico, who was signed by WWE as one of Triple H's, his first major major signing, in fact, was Sin Cara. He's got this idea of going around the world and signing up great talent, as opposed to trying to create homegrown superstars and developmental. Signed Sin Cara. Sin Cara came to WWE. Can't speak English. He can't cut promos. He doesn't really work the WWE style. But he got over huge with the kids, and he was selling a ton of merchandise. So what happened was he failed a wellness test, and he was taken out of action. And they wanted him back prior to the one-month mark. So what they did was they took a fella they had in developmental who used to go by the name Unico and Incognito. He was also a luchador who had been signed by WWE. And as coincidence would have it, this man in developmental that they chose to replace Sin Cara was, in fact, the man who originally used the name Mystico in Mexico. He was using the name Mystico around the Juarez area. He spelled it M-Y-S-T-I-C-O. And CMLL created this character and gave it to the man who's playing Sin Cara, the original. And they spelled it M-I-S-T-I-C-O. So when the original Sin Cara went down, they brought in the other, this fella here, Incognito, Unico. They put a mask on him and they made him the new Sin Cara. And for a while there, the idea was that the original Sin Cara wasn't even coming back. There was a lot of heat on him. Felt that he walked around backstage like a superstar. There was just, he didn't shake hands with everybody. Lots of heat. So there was talk of not bringing him back. But the guy that came back to take his place, not as good a worker, didn't have the same kind of charisma. Just, it wasn't the same. There were some fans that were fooled, but it was really, if you watched closely, it was a night and day difference. Different physique, the whole nine yards. So eventually they brought the other Sin Cara back, and they did a feud, or they did a bunch of deals where, you know, is this the real Sin Cara? Is this the imposter Sin Cara? They had them both on TV at the same time. The announcers had to pretend like they didn't know which guy was which, even though they were both billed at different weights. But anyway, the point was they're going to have a match this coming afternoon. And in the storyline, the evil Sin Cara, in a promo on Friday in Spanish, mentioned that in Mexico, the original Sin Cara, the original Mystico, had stolen his gimmick. That he was Mystico first, and that this guy came along, stole his gimmick, and became a huge superstar as a result of it. So now his plan is he has come to WWE, and he is going to steal Sin Cara's gimmick, and he is going to become a big superstar. And that's basically the storyline that they're playing here tonight on the show. It is the original Sin Cara versus the fake Sin Cara. The original Mystico against the man that was given the Mystico gimmick by CMLL. They are going to have a match. There has been heat between the two in the past before. I'm not sure if they can work all that well together. This could be a train wreck. This could be a disaster. It is in both of their best interest to have a good match, particularly the evil Sin Cara, because they're keeping the good guy, the good Sin Cara. So if the evil Sin Cara has a horrible match, that could be it for him. Back to developmental, God knows what they'll do. If he has a great match, perhaps they'll just keep two Sin Caras running around. But I would be stunned if the evil Sin Cara won, unless the idea is they're going to be doing some sort of prolonged feud. So we'll see where they go. But it's a very interesting storyline. I could not believe they mentioned the Mystico name on SmackDown. I could not believe they played up the storyline from Mexico. That is a real-life storyline, but they did. And now it culminates, or at least begins, tonight at Hell in a Cell. What are your predictions here?
Yeah, in a way, with the way this whole convoluted hot mess of a situation has been with Sin Cara and Unico and, you know, everything else. And they had signed who? What, Ultimo Guerrero or Rey Bucanero? Who did they sign that they hadn't utilized either?
Averno.
Or Averno, I'm sorry, Averno. I mean, it's... at least you've got raw emotion that way. They told the truth in the promo. So, I mean, you have legitimate, you know, again, one of those old school things we talk about, you know, legitimate wanting to be someone else and jealousy over the spot and wanting their spot and feeling that they were wrong. So they kind of fell, you know, ass backwards into something that way, where at least for the fans, you know, the Mexican fans that do know what's going on, it does make some sense. Yeah, Sin Cara, the good Mystico Sin Cara has got to be the one to win this. hopefully they just he wins and it's over with. I don't think, again, I don't see why you'd have to have Hunico on the main roster. He can go back down to FCW. There's plenty of other guys who, you know, need care on those shows. I think it's on technically they're on SmackDown. I mean, there's plenty of guys on there that need enough love where, you know, Hunico, as long as it's a good enough match, Sin Cara winning it, Hunico goes away, and then we just continue on with something with Sin Cara.
You know, the stipulations are the winner gets to be Sin Cara, so trying to think of how they would do this. You know, I presume that CML has MISTICO, but maybe you could do a deal where, I don't know, evil Sin Cara cheats to win, and then good Sin Cara just says, all right, well, I'm Mystico now. I'm back to my old name, and spell it MYSTICO. And then you can bring him to Mexico as Mystico, and there's not going to be any people confused about who he is. Or maybe just the other guy will take the old Mystico name back with a Y. A lot of different ways they could go here, or they could just bump the guy back to developmental. That's always a possibility as well.
But, and here's the thing, dude. They can completely forget about what they said in that promo. I mean, it could be one of those Acabono Big Show situations where it's like, you know, it happens, you know, just because you're going down there, and, you know, it can let some action happen down there when you do the tapings, but then never be heard from again when it comes to official WWE history. So it could just be a little blip like that, too. But to me, it also shows that I know they hate this. We talked about this on this show when Sin Cara was coming up, and we talked about Averno coming up. Having multiple mask guys is okay. You can actually have another guy with a mask. You don't have to push him like Rey Mysterio or Mystico or any of that sort of stuff. But it is another mask you can, you know, overprice at $60 or whatever it is that you can get for $5 in Mexico and sell merchandise that way. And if he does have a good enough match, put him under another mask and then hold off on having a mask versus mask match.
I got an idea. I don't know if this is possible logistically, but you do Sin Cara versus Sin Cara tonight, and the good Sin Cara is about to win, and a third Sin Cara runs out and costs him the match, and then he goes to the name Mystico, and then you've got Mystico, Sin Cara, and the third guy, who would be Averno, and then you have 2-on-1 against the good guy, and he's got to beat both of them. And he could get the revenge on the bad Sin Cara at Vengeance. And then the new guy, who would be Averno, they could have a three-match series on three straight pay-per-views, and they'd all be awesome. And then lead up to the, you know, do a handicap match or something with, or even get a baby face for to team with Sin Cara and do a tag match and put double mask versus mask and hair or something like that. I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can go with this. It would be a lot of fun. But my guess is they ain't going to do none of that.
No, probably not. Because like you're saying, like tag-wise, hook him up with somebody else. Hey, give him Daniel Bryan and have Bryan turn on him at some point down the line to give at least Daniel Bryan maybe something to do with that goofy briefcase.
Now, the show itself, Hell in a Cell, we haven't even talked about the SummerSlam buy rate. SummerSlam buy rate was the lowest domestic buy rate for SummerSlam of all time. Yes. That's not good. Now, I actually I don't like to say I told you so, but I predicted that this show was going to do very bad. And people yelled at me for it, and then it did very bad. So I haven't heard from those people apologizing. Maybe they will at some point, but point is, I am also hereby predicting that this Hell in a Cell does a terrible number. I see no reason it's going to do any good. They've killed the Hell in a Cell concept. We can talk about that more after the break. I know I promised to talk about it earlier. They've killed the concept. It's one pay-per-view coming 2 weeks after another one. You know, some of the angles they built on Raw were actually angles for Vengeance and not this Hell in a Cell show. I just see this one doing horribly.
They have too many shows.
We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are, as we are every week, here for 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, Sports Byline USA Radio Networks, streaming live worldwide online at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking about the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view and why the show is going to do, as they say, no buys, and why WWE has killed the Hell in a Cell concept. You mentioned too many shows. That's a major part of it. They're doing 13 pay-per-views a year. Why they are doing this show, I have absolutely no earthly idea. Three shows in 5 weeks is preposterous, especially when you're asking. Go ahead.
Some of this, too, though, and I will just, here's the one thing in their defense, and there's only one thing in their defense. It is hard to schedule pay-per-view now with the amount of shows the UFC runs, with boxing and multiple promoters and getting even smaller shows on pay-per-view and TNA and everything else. It is not easy, even though WWE has the usually first right except for bigger shows. It's hard to schedule shows. That's why the superfluous 13th show makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Well, I was trying to figure out how you were defending them here.
No, I'm not really defending them at all, but it just shows you how superfluous the 13th show is when it's already difficult to schedule pay-per-view as it is, as far as having the times where you can actually get them spread enough apart.
Yeah, this extra show here is just useless, and it's not going to do a good number, and they've killed the Hell in a Cell concept. You know, Hell in a Cell is supposed to be a culmination of a big feud. It's not just supposed to be the show that you run every October, which is what it is now. None of these matches are ready for Hell in a Cell. Why
build up to Brock and Rock? Remember the training videos and all that sort of stuff?
Sure. Or any of these.
It's all of them. Yeah, Mind Games, all of them. It's just, the thing that makes it even worse, and the fact that it's even more substitute, is the fact that there's no blood involved on top of this either. There's not going to be, you know, plunder and violence to the level that you would need for a guy like Mark Henry and Randy Orton when you decide to run a match like that in there. When you make it when they started going in the TNA direction of having themed pay-per-views and kind of like, you know, the ladder match was a successful thing in money, or the Money in the Bank ladder match. We're going to have a pay-per-view. Night of Champions was a Raw concept for a three-hour Raw on USA. Now that's going to be a concept, and they're not even building towards it, which makes it mean nothing. And thank God, one of the things for my youth, you know, forget about the Triple Cage of Doom, but at least War Games, thank God they haven't brought that back to ruin it yet, because there is no point to doing these themed pay-per-views if you're just going to use that as the backdrop. I mean, it's, again, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And it's, you know, it just boggles my mind where it's like they're going to force feed it because the wrestling is the backdrop, or the entertainment portion is the backdrop just for this big, massive cage.
You know, I was thinking about this. I'm actually going to put over TNA here very quickly. Actually, they had a great show this Thursday. At least the last half hour or so was awesome. But I will say this about TNA. They have a show every year called Lockdown. And this year, there were matches that they could have run the month prior to Lockdown. But even though they were shooting angles for them, they didn't put them on the pay-per-view. They held them off yet another month so that they would take place at Lockdown. They actually made it so that the match culminated at the Cage show. They've done this before, you know, and they don't even do that for Hell in a Cell. It's just like, okay, we're gonna book some matches, and this month they're gonna be in a cage. Why does John Cena, CM Punk, and Alberto Del Rio have to be in a cage? I mean, does one thing happen that would require them to be in a cage? Why does Randy Orton and Mark Henry have to take place in a cage, for God's sake? Mark Henry beat him clean in the middle of the ring. What do they need a cage for now? You know, it's not like somebody ran in during the last match. You know, it's even dumber because they did like a lumberjack match. They did a lumberjack match with Mark Henry and Christian. And a bunch of lumberjacks tried to attack Mark Henry, which, you know, if they were attacking a normal person, perhaps that would necessitate a cage because all these people were attacking the guy. But no, they all attacked Mark Henry and he just roared and they all went flying. So what do you need to put this guy in a cage for? He's his own cage. The whole idea of this pay-per-view, it doesn't need to take place. It's not the culmination of anything. And as you noted, at least back in the day you knew, and I am not, listen, I don't want to see anyone ever go off the top of a cage again. But at least back in the day, you knew if you paid your money, some guy may go off the top of a cage into a bale of hay. or they may get busted open, or you may have your two best workers. I mean, for God's sake, Randy Orton and Christian can have the best match of anybody in WWE together right now, probably. They're not even working together in Hell in a Cell. Not that I need to see that match for the 15th time. But the point is, you know, you were in the old days, it was either A, the culmination of a great feud, B, you were guaranteed a bloodbath, or C, you were guaranteed a near five-star match. Now, none of these matches are going to be a bloodbath. None of these matches are the culmination of a big feud that needs to take place in a cage. And none of these matches are going to be even close to four stars, I would guess. Maybe the three-way, but probably not. So, I mean, why would anyone buy this show? I mean, there's no reason to buy this show, especially with the main event that's a three-way, where it doesn't matter at all who the champion is, because the belt is ping-pong back and forth, and everyone knows it's going to do that again. So, I mean, this is going to do a really horrible buy rate, guaranteed.
You got a really whack Monday night football game, Tampa Bay and Indianapolis. What's scary is if Raw somehow bounces back and actually gets a good enough rating, because obviously it should get, hopefully, one would think, a little bit of a bump coming after a pay-per-view, especially not a pay-per-view that, as you were saying, a whole lot of people are going to order, so maybe they'll wait and tune in on Monday just to see if they missed actually anything, especially because the football game is so bad. If they get a good rating, what's scary is I wonder if Vince will be okay with this, if we'll hear rumblings about how upset they'll be over the buy rate until it comes out. But then that'll just delay the inevitable. When the buy rate comes out, well, you know what? Hell in the Cell just isn't working as a concept
good.
Anymore, just like SummerSlam.
Great! Cut it!
Well, and that would be good. But what's too bad, though, is, Brian, it's something that could be effective and could be good that you know, it's... They've left scorched earth on Hell in the Cell. That says something. Because you know what could have used Hell in the Cell if they'd gone to plan things out further was Triple H and CM Punk. They could have waited and drawn that out a little bit longer because, you know, Cena had a little grasp of greatness as far as being a, you know, a character that people can get behind again when he was angry after his loss. You could have went with Del Rio and Cena a little bit further, especially with them going into Mexico. And again, it's another indictment of they change things up too much. They overthink things, you know, that shouldn't be overthought, and they just make a mess of things. And again, maybe they have some great master plan, but what continues to happen over and over again is they prove that they don't. They do some things great, and when they do things fantastic, they're the best in the world at doing it. But the problem is they just don't do that enough, and they don't give you a reason to spend your money on them $50 every single month, not with the amount of competition there is.
Raw will do probably a three Monday. I figured this out, or at least I think I figured this out. From looking at the ratings for both Raw and Impact, it's very interesting. On Impact, a big football game is going to affect the rating a lot less than, say, a big episode of Jersey Shore. And I think it's because they write their television like Jersey Shore as opposed to writing it like a sport. So an actual show like Jersey Shore is going to hurt them more than a sporting event. That's Impact. With WWE, there was a couple of weeks back where there was a huge rating for Dancing with the Stars. There was a huge rating for 2.5 Men. The Ashton Kutcher debut, and there was only a lackluster rating for football, and that Raw did a good number. They were not affected by 2.5 Men. They were not affected by Dancing with the Stars, no matter how big those ratings were. But then the next week, when you had a giant football game doing a big rating, that affected Raw. So the Raw audience is affected by sports, and the Impact audience is affected by better entertainment. So I expect if the football game this coming Monday is not a big marquee matchup, that Raw is going to do fine, which I'm sure Vince will look back at this and go, oh, well, thank God we put the title back on Randy Orton, or whatever they do tonight. But I will say that in 3 months when they get the buy rate for Hell in a Cell, when it becomes public, Vince ain't going to remember what the rating was for Raw the next day. He's just going to pitch a fit.
And it's just too bad. You know, the stuff I sent you about Floyd Mayweather, and, you know, it's announced that Floyd Mayweather and Victor Ortiz, I mean, I don't know. It felt like 800,000 buys, but hey, they're claiming 1.3 million. They'll probably end up claiming 1.7 million by the time this whole thing shakes out. It's hard to really, you know, it's not an exact science sometimes when it comes to really getting these pay-per-view numbers, an honest one out of a boxing promoter. But you look at the storylines of Floyd Mayweather throughout the years. He's been feuding with Larry Merchant now for years. He's threatened retirement three times. I mean, just there are things with that never, you know, the family feuds. There's things that just are constant streams and things throughout, you know, history with Floyd Mayweather, which makes him an interesting character, which makes him somebody that people have invested in and that people have an interest in. No matter how much trouble he gets in outside of the ring and all these things with women and guns and the whole nine yards and his family situation, all that sort of stuff, he's still an incredibly intriguing character that people have invested in. Where are the people that WWE has invested in? And you know, not pulled the wool, you know, or pulled the rug out under. Dolph Ziggler, where is Dolph Ziggler on this pay-per-view? Why is Dolph Ziggler in a TNA-level tag team storyline with Jack Swagger? You know, he's done a great job with everything they've asked him to do. He's got a legitimate Kent State, you know, Division I champion wrestling background. He's been able to survive all of these dumb gimmicks that they've given him over the years, for God's sakes. Remember, everybody, that was Chavo Guerrero's caddy. You know, where are these guys?
Chavo Guerrero's caddy. What a... I wish I'd never had to be reminded of that. All right, we got some more news to talk about after the break. Tons of news. So back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. A caddy! We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And what I got during the break, I mean, oh my God. So I wanted to move on from Hell in a Cell. I didn't want to talk about it anymore, but WWE has forced me back into talking about it again. So, Mike, for the young listeners out there, what is the point of a cage match back in the day?
Well, the cage match was a culmination of two guys who have been feuding with each other nonstop and battling with each other nonstop, and there's been lots of outside interference, or maybe the guy has tried to be, you know, the guy in question has tried to get away and he's slipped out and he's been disqualified and gotten counted out and ran away from the man. So it's usually one of those two things which necessitates the cage to keep people in. And in fact, they had to put the roof on the cage because people started to sneak in and throw objects over the top that way. So they put a top on there to really make sure nobody was going to get in or out of that thing.
Nobody gets in, nobody gets out, you say?
Yes.
As God is my witness, I just saw this on the WWE Twitter. They're asking a question of their fans. And the question is, who the hell would want to break into the Hell in a Cell? WWE.com has your answer. And apparently if you go to WWE.com, there's all the information about who might break into Hell in a Cell tonight on the show. So why do you even have a cage?
Why are you building drama for the show and building interest for it that way? That's a marketing tool you're going to use, is who's going to get in. I mean, again, how ass-backwards is this? It just shows you how ass-backwards the whole thing is, too. This is, again, it's what we hammer TNA for. Just because WWE does it doesn't make it right, or that they deserve a pass. They're starting from the end and working backwards to what?
This is astonishing. If you go to the website, there is a whole article here by a fellow named Michael Burdick, who should probably be fired as a result of this, telling about all the times that a man has broken a door down, a man has snuck into the cage dressed as a cameraman, a man who has come up from underneath the ring, a man who has used bolt cutters to break in. Oh, my God. I give up.
Oops.
Just dropped my iPhone.
Do you know the only time up. that, well, I'm not saying the only time ever, really, Austin Idol and Tommy Rich in Memphis with Jerry Lawler and posting him and all that stuff, and it's, you know,
just idiotic.
Why? It's just stupid. Just dumb.
All right, I'm moving on. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm going to really get angry. All right. It's been 2 weeks since we've been back on the show, and a lot of news to talk about here. 2 weeks is so long that the last time we were on this show, I believe I was talking to you about how I kicked caffeine. Maybe it was Josh Nason. It was Josh Nason. How I'd kick caffeine. I'm already back drinking Red Bull, so I just want everyone to have that update there for those of you that were gravely concerned. All right, news here to talk about. UFC 135, Rampage versus Jones. We're just going to run down some quick news bits here and keep moving on because we got a lot to talk about. Rampage Jones. Jones destroyed the guy. Rampage at the press conference afterwards said, "I thought the guy was all hype. I was wrong." And Jones now in line for Rashad Evans, the match that had been set up quite a while ago, and Jones pulled out due to a broken hand and then found out, an injured hand, not broken, but said he needed hand surgery, and then turns out he didn't. And I think that's when fans first started to turn on John Jones. But Mike, quick thoughts on that fight and the upcoming Jones versus Rashad fight.
It's cool. They can turn on John Jones because they hate Rashad Evans so much. It won't matter. They'll be back to being John Jones fans soon. When we had a chance to go and see the show in Philadelphia with Ortiz and Rashad, you know, yeah, Ortiz took the fight on short notice and yada, yada, yada. Rashad Evans looked freaking fantastic. And as dangerous as John Jones is, I mean, this is a dangerous fight. I mean, this is going to be, it should be a great fight. It should be an absolutely great fight, unless both guys are too incredibly cautious. But I am very confident in Rashad Evans right now. And again, Jones is a freak of an athlete, and it wouldn't surprise me if he won, but I was really impressed with Rashad Evans. And he really, you know, he revels wearing the suit and being a little bit hated and carrying himself because he knows how good he is, and it's just, I can see him winning that fight, and again, that was a pretty good show too. You know, with Diaz and Gomi and Koscheck and Matt Hughes ending the way it did, kind of surprisingly there. I thought that was actually a good show too. What kind of buy rate did it do? Probably not much, but hey, again, they have a lot of shows too.
They do, in fact, have a lot of shows. And interesting thing about that fight is that the odds, I thought were long, minus 600 for Jones, and turns out they weren't long at all. And the Rashad fight, I thought the odds would be a little bit closer. They were only slightly closer. It is minus 450 Jones in that particular fight. So interesting numbers.
What's the plus on Rashad?
It's like plus 260 or something, if I recall.
It's like, how do you not throw $20 on Rashad just because, you know, hey, yeah, you might lose. It's only $20 if that's the case. But, you know, I think as the time gets closer, I think you're going to be, I think that line is going to start shrinking down more and more and more unless something comes out of Rashad's camp that indicates that he's not going to be ready. Because I think as dangerous as Jones is, where people forget how dangerous Rashad Evans is. He's got great wrestling. He's got big, heavy hands. I mean, he doesn't mind trading. In fact, that's what got him in trouble with Machida, is because he wanted to stand there and there and you know, with his balls out. And it just, he's going to be a dangerous guy, and he's a really tough guy for John Jones to face.
WWE sent out a survey about their network asking if fans would be interested in paying $7 to $12.99 a month, I believe, to have it part of a package with the NFL Network and some other networks as well. And what they would think about the idea of the big four pay-per-views airing on the network. And had different people involved with the project talk about different, I guess, interpretations of that line. Some have said that, you know, they would move WrestleMania off pay-per-view onto this network, which would be preposterous. And others that said, nah, they're talking about it would still be on pay-per-view, but you could get it free, you know, 5 days later, Friday night, on the network like HBO does with boxing, or Saturday night. And, I mean, obviously at this point they have not made any sort of decisions. It's very, very premature. They're just asking questions. But, I mean, on the surface, and not even on the surface, well below the surface, the idea of moving WrestleMania off pay-per-view to a network is absolutely just complete insanity.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that makes sense is if you get an insane amount of revenue from sponsors. To be all over where you're running commercial spots and you have it themed out and stuff like that, and that's just not going to happen, not in this economy right now. It just won't. Now, the idea of running it a week late, not a bad idea. I mean, and no matter what happens, WWE is in the running for G4 and all that sort of stuff, and there was talk about that. You know, it was that would have been good in the aspect that it's, you know, it's got good spots on Comcast and all that stuff, but no matter who had bought it, whether it was WWF or WWE or UFC, if they would have bought it, it was going to be moved into that sports tier anyway. So, you know, you're already, and the thing is, and that's good for WWE too. I mean, again, I don't know what their startup costs and all of that sort of stuff will be, but to be in that sports tier where you already have the Golf Channel, the NFL Network, the NBA, NHL, MLB, Speed Vision, all that sort of stuff's in there anyway, it's not a bad idea to be put in there. I mean, it's going to be your best shot at visibility and running shows like, you know, a week afterwards or something like that, you know, for on the network, that's not a bad idea either. I don't know if a week, because again, that hurts boxing in a lot of ways. I mean, you watch to make history, and there's people that are always going to need to have it that second, and wrestling and boxing and mixed martial arts are like that. In fact, all sports are really like that. People don't like watching it on delay, but WWE is a little bit of a different animal where I would at least wait 2 weeks out or something like that and make sure that it doesn't also air, make it exclusive to that network and it doesn't also air on their 24/7 channels. You got to make people, you know, pay the $5 or $6 to get that sports package to watch you.
ROH debuted on Sinclair. Good first show, introductory show. Very, very different from TNA and WWE, not only in terms of production, but in terms of good, basic, logical booking and long pro wrestling matches. It's available on Sinclair affiliates around the country. If you don't have Sinclair, you can sign up to the ROH website. It's $7.99 a month, ROHWrestling.com. You can watch the show on Mondays. And if you don't want to pay, you can register for the site for free and watch the show on Thursday on the website. So second show aired last night. I've not seen it yet, but we'll talk about it next week.
Yes. Oh, consummate self-promoter. Brutal Bob Evans, manager of Mike Bennett. A belated happy birthday wish. And Ring of Honor fans, they hate Mike Bennett.
Yes, they do. Dana White last night announced, after many, many questions and many statements by Kurt Angle, that in fact, he had made a deal with Kurt Angle to appear on the Kimbo Slice season of Ultimate Fighter, and Kurt had agreed to do it. They had sent him all the way to get his medicals done, but as it turned out, he could not pass the UFC medicals, and that is why he never appeared on Ultimate Fighter or fought in UFC. Dana said, I never offered him a pay-per-view match with Kimbo. Kurt, I love you, but you know that's not true. But I did offer him the spot on Ultimate Fighter. He did accept, but the medicals got in the way.
You know, that's too bad. Not like the season needed it anyway, being the highest rated season and having, you know, Rampage and Rashad going back at each other and having Kimbo and everybody else on there that they did. But how awesome would that have been? How awesome would that have been? And how, you know, it would have hurt Nelson because I have a feeling we would have seen Angle and Kimbo right off the bat.
The Matt Hardy drug bust. We haven't even talked about this yet. Police went to his house after a call from his girlfriend and obtained a search warrant. Found a number of different drugs, steroids, a hit of ecstasy. Suffice to say, between numerous accidents, DUIs, Matt Hardy was looking at $1 million in bail to get out of, I guess, wherever he was at. And he only was allowed to leave in order to go to WWE-sponsored rehab. So Matt Hardy is in a three-month rehab program as we speak. He is facing a long, rough road. But hopefully he is at least getting help. And, yeah, it's this is insanity. Another crazy story. I mean, last time we were talking about Matt Hardy, it was like something needed to be done. And then this story broke. It just keeps getting worse. Although this is a positive step to actually go to rehab for 3 months. Although, as we talked about then, you know, being forced into rehab, not always the best success rate.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, doing it for the right reasons, too. I mean, he was the one saying, you know, knowing damn well he was on what he was on, well, you got a zero on the alcohol test. Well, you know, it's 2011. I think we know the deal, dude. You know, you're not fooling anybody. And, you know, basically, you know, again, announcing this, knowing he's staring down the barrel of big problems, taking WWE up on their offer is, we'll have to see. But you know what? It thankfully, it lays to rest any more nonsense of hearing about him, hopefully for a while.
All right, Dana White announced the UFC show in Japan coming up, I believe in February, is going to be airing live in the U.S. on television, and it will be immediately followed by a three-hour live pay-per-view from Las Vegas. Two shows in one day going back-to-back from different parts of the world. I don't know why we need this, but we're getting it.
It's a seminal moment in the history of broadcasting in the UFC.
Sure.
If it goes down well. If it doesn't go down well, it was a mistake we tried, and yeah, we're not going to do that again.
All right, we're going to head to a break here. When we come back, we got a couple of other quick news bits. You can always head to WrestlingObserver.com for more news. We have it every day, daily news updates. I mean, keep up at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We're back here. Final segment on the show, Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, joined by Mike Sempervivi, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, Sports Byline USA, streaming worldwide online at WrestlingObserver.com every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. In just a moment, when this show goes off the air, live running play-by-play of the WWE Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. It is, in fact, taking place live. Dave will be doing the play-by-play. We'll do a radio show later on tonight, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, this coming Saturday night, yet another UFC show. There's shows like every night, it appears. And this one, Gray Maynard. I'm sorry, not Gray Maynard. That's, actually, yes, it's Edgar Maynard, isn't it? What is this weekend? Good God Almighty.
Edgar Maynard.
And Aldo.
You remember the awesome promo?
I do remember the awesome Aldo. Oh, that promo was hideous. But yes, Maynard Edgar is this Saturday, as well as Chael Sonnen and Brian Stann, which is going to be a fun fight. Although, Chael Sonnen is sick right now. He's trying to get better. And of course, Aldo Florian. What are your quick picks for the top three fights?
Oof, I'm going to take Aldo. You know, I'm going to take Stan just because I'm hoping Sonnen's actually sick and hopefully he is leaked this information and cuts a really great promo afterwards. I know that's terrible for me to think about when it comes to real sports. Takes the, you know, the honor out of real sports. But you know what? Sonnen losing just to complain, I'll actually be okay with that. And then in the main event, I don't know. I'll go with my boy Frankie again, even though it's going to be another tight fight. I don't know. I can't see knockout or anything like that. I see Frankie by decision and people maybe not liking it by the end of it. But you know what? There you go. There's another dominant champion as it looks right now. If he beats Maynard again too, where it's like, man, Gilbert Melendez probably needs to come in pretty damn soon for the UFC.
I predict Maynard goes to sleep. And I don't mean getting knocked out. I think he just falls asleep in the middle of the octagon, and Frankie's announced your winner. All right, everybody, we are out of here. Live running play-by-play of Hell in a Cell on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com right now. Radio show later tonight, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. Dave and I are running down the show. We'll be back next week. Brand new show. Want to thank everybody for listening. We'll talk to you again then. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.